Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
If you're in a relationship with a narcissist, as you said, Rebecca, they're going to use everything that they can to try and maintain control. And so money really is just a tool to enable them to do so, the narcissist to have control. And so all of these different ways that they use money as a tool to control are things that you have to be aware of so that you can kind of plan ways to prevent or to take back some of the control and kind of turn the table.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and I'm so excited to have Jason Crowley back on my show. We did a short little show a couple months back about narcissism and money and how narcissists use money to financially abuse their targets. And it was such a popular video, and it's such a popular topic that I wanted to bring him back onto the show. So welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So Jason is a financial advisor, and he's got, oh my gosh, so many letters behind his name. He's a CFA, CDFA, I think, you know, several different. You've definitely dedicated yourself to the world of financial planning and being good at that. But even more interesting, I think that you're probably one of the only financial advisors that I'm aware of that specializes in dealing with finances and well-being when people are either in a narcissistic relationship or coming out of a narcissistic relationship. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how did you come to have that as your target area, as your niche?
It's just something that comes up really, really frequently. So it started off kind of just more in the generic financial planning, financial advisory, wealth management space. And then from there, I kind of niched down to get more into the divorce financial planning world. And then the more work that I was doing in divorce financial planning from there, then kind of niched down a little bit again, as I started seeing a lot of the financial control and financial abuse that tends to happen in narcissistic relationships. It was just something that kind of happened by chance as a result of where our practice went. And so that was how I ended up getting involved in that.
Yeah. And you have a fantastic website that has lots and lots of information and free tools. And we'll get more into that at the end where you can talk about your website, but you really have built such great resources for people who are dealing with divorcing and finances being one of the issues. So I recently did a survey of my community and found that money overwhelmingly is the biggest controlling tool and the biggest area of angst and anxiety and trauma in that my community sees. So, and we had, I think about 400 people who responded to the survey. And in that, we found that 66% of those surveyed stated that money is a tool that was used to control them. It's an agent of power, influence. And 48% said hiding money is a top concern. 22% said that their narcissistic partner controls their monthly spending. And 30% said that they were concerned that their narcissist was putting them into debt. I mean, it goes on and on. So 53% said that their narcissistic partners spend money on themselves and not to them. And you know, these people need help. They need ideas to turn the tables and learn how to be in control. Attorney's fees was a big deal too. You know, a lot of my people surveyed said that 87% said that they spent much higher fees than expected due to all the extra hours required to deal with a narcissist. And a huge percentage of the people who responded said that their fees went way over $100,000. So this is a real issue. So that's why I wanted to talk about the top five ways that narcissists use money to control, and wanted to bring you on. And because you're the expert, you know. So let's talk about the first way, which is cutting off credit cards. What do you see with that, and what can people do about it?
So, I mean, I think the first thing you need to do is start planning ahead of time. I think, you know, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, as you said, Rebecca, they're going to use everything that they can to try and maintain control. And so money really is just a tool to enable them to do so, the narcissist to have control. And so all of these different ways that they use money as a tool to control are things that you have to be aware of so that you can kind of plan ways to prevent or to take back some of the control and kind of turn the table. So when it comes to cutting off credit cards, I think the first thing you want to do is just start to build your credit. There's actually a interesting tool I just came across the other day. I think it's called Grow Credit. And what it enables you to do is actually start building your credit through subscriptions. So if you're not the person that has kind of control over your own finances, you can use a program like this to actually be able to start building credit through things like your Netflix subscription, just all the types of things that are already paid regularly. And really all this program is doing is it's starting to report those subscriptions to the major credit bureaus. And so in doing so, that will enable you to start building your credit. Now, this way, when the time comes to pull the trigger, you'll be in a position where you do have credit established and you're able to open credit cards in your own name and really start to still have a lifeline to be able to have access to capital.
Okay. So, but you know, I'm hearing a lot of people, I can feel what the collective is going to be saying. They're going to be saying, but how do I know that he or she is going to cut off the credit cards? Or how do I know that this is going to happen? What could they do about that?
So, I mean, the first thing is you never know exactly what someone else is going to do. But you always want to prepare for the worst. And so, you know, I think by taking some of these steps, you're really hedging your bets. And so if you've done all of the things to enable you to prepare for the what ifs, for if they do take certain actions to maintain control, to cut off your credit cards, and then they don't, great, no big deal. But if you haven't taken those steps, then you'll be in a much more challenging situation. And so I think one of the biggest things, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, is you do have to be more strategic. You do have to plan ahead. You do have to plan for the worst and recognize some of those tactics that they like to use and figure out ways that you can prepare or set the table so that you're able to deal with those tactics better than you would if you hadn't done any of those things in advance. It's much more challenging to do so if you wait and then these things happen at the last minute and you haven't taken any of the steps in advance.
Exactly. And especially if you're dealing with somebody that you suspect is either a narcissist or has narcissistic traits, then, you know, just understand, look at the data. Look at the data from the survey that I just read out to you. It's more likely than not that they're going to start engaging in these kinds of tactics. So if you think that leaving might be something that you're looking at or that they are considering leaving you, then, you know, starting to take these steps that Jason was just talking about is something that you should at least start investigating and be ready to take that those steps if you know you need to.
And I mean, that's one of the things I hear time and time again when in working with clients is they weren't able to name what this is. You know, if they weren't maybe exposed to narcissism much in the past, I think everyone's become a lot more familiar with it as a term, but the ability to tell that your partner is a narcissist, a lot of people just aren't able to kind of see clearly about that until it's too late. But the better job that you're able to do of educating yourself and understanding some of the tactics that they use, that's going to put you in a position where you're able to identify and kind of see things more clearly for what they are as some of that starts to fade. And then we start to kind of peel back the layers of the onion. So really knowledge is power in all of these things, because in a lot of ways, they're going to use every tool that they have to control. And so if you understand what the narcissist playbook looks like, and you can kind of develop your own playbook in response to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a good segue into the next one, which is hiding money or moving money. And I can say that as a divorce lawyer, that a lot of times people think that there's money being hidden or moved a lot more than it actually is. You know, in today's day and age of the digital world, where, you know, you really can see any movement of money pretty much, even if you take out sums of cash, you know, where did all those sums of cash go? So, but it still doesn't help or assuage that fear that this person is going to hide money or move money and it's going to be somewhere else. And even if you can find it, it costs money to find it. And sometimes people can be really good at finding places to put it or whatever. So let's talk a little bit more about that and what you've seen and what will work for helping that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the hardest piece to track is cash. And so if you have someone who's got a cash business where they're taking in a lot of cash, that's going to be the situation where it's the most challenging to be able to track, because it really never came in to your financial ecosystem, you and your spouse's financial ecosystem. So that's the one that's going to be the most difficult to track. In the absence of that, as you said, there's everything is available really online and is digitized. And so there's a lot that you can do to be able to kind of get a sense. So I would say that I find that more often than not, it's a very legitimate concern that is not as grounded in reality as when we actually really start to look under the hood and try and see, is there any hidden money, et cetera. So one of the things that I often like to do, because it is a cost-benefit analysis. So I think it's a big mistake to try to get to the bottom of things for the sake of getting to the bottom of things. You really want to be smart about where you're spending money. It doesn't make any sense to spend $10,000 to recover one. And so one of the approaches that you can take, particularly if you have a long-term marriage, is pick a year and look at that year and try to see if that makes sense. Right. Just, and a lot of times what comes up when I make this suggestion to clients is, well, he's been planning this for a few years. So, you know, maybe he's covering his tracks. So maybe you go back a few years and actually look at that period, and you can do kind of what I call the smoking gun analysis. And you just try to get an assessment of what's the total income for the course of the year. What were the total expenses, total taxes paid? And so that should be your cash flow surplus or deficit. Has there been any gains or losses in terms of financial assets? And when you take those things together, does it make sense with what the balance was at the beginning of the year versus of your all assets versus the balance at the end of the year? And if those things line up, you know, plus or minus within reason, then hopefully that alleviates some of the concerns, because where this really becomes a challenge is if they're not hiding money and you accuse them of hiding money, or you're in your own head about the concern, if you can't move past that, you might actually have a decent settlement deal on the table that you're not willing to agree to because of this lingering concern. So you want to try to address it in the most cost-effective, efficient way that you possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways to do it.
I love that. So you're kind of back-ending your way into that. I use that methodology when I'm looking at income sometimes, where I look at, okay, well, what has your lifestyle been? And, you know, obviously, if you have your kids in private school and you're living in this million-dollar home and you've gone on vacations and you've done all of these things, then this person is not making $25,000 a year like they say they are on their tax return. And most of the time you see that actually when somebody is self-employed because they've been able to deduct so many things. You know, if they're an S corp and it's a pass-through income, then they've deducted so many things off the business. So that's when you have to go back and you look at the business and you kind of start doing add backs. But it's the same sort of thing where you're kind of back ending your way into, well, you couldn't have had this lifestyle unless more money was coming in.
Exactly. And then so, if things don't add up, now you know, now at least you've kind of substantiated that concern, and then you can dig deeper, whether it's through a full forensic analysis, whether it's through hiring private investigators to do, you know, an international asset search and see if there's things hidden in their name. But you've avoided the unnecessary expense and escalating the conflict by doing all of those things, by first using kind of a throwing out a trial balloon, if you will, to see, you know, is this really an issue or not?
Yeah.
And that's can be a huge, huge cost savings.
Definitely.
Because you can spend tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars throwing really good money after bad in some of these situations.
And is that something that you help your clients do?
Yeah. I'm not a forensic accountant. So if someone wants to dig into look under every nook and cranny.
But just that kind of first blush, like, should we even bother with a forensic accountant? You can help your clients with that.
Exactly. And we have a forensic accounting firm that we work with as our back office in situations where they want to go and dig deeper.
Right. Okay. So, and just from the attorney's perspective, I'm not licensed in all 50 states or all around the world, but I have people who have bought my programs and who watch my videos from all around the world. And so I do want to say that in general, if money is being hidden or moved or spent or whatever in a way that wasn't part of the marriage decision, and you didn't benefit from that in some way, then there could potentially be a claim for waste or dissipation or clawback or bringing that back in as part of the overall property division conversation.
Right.
That's why you wanted to make those inquiries and do those sorts of things, you know, if it seems worth it. But, you know, again, you want to make sure that there's a good return on your investment. So, you know, using somebody like Jason, who's already managing your finances as a client, you know, he can do, you know, just sort of like this first blush, is it even worth it to go deeper? And then if it is, how much, you know, and that's something that you would be able to tell them too. Hey, there's $500,000 missing over here. Okay, you know, it's going to be worth spending a few thousand bucks on an asset search person, you know, and or maybe a forensic accountant, right? So, but if it's only $10,000 that's missing, then it probably won't be worth the return on your investment.
Exactly. So, and you never want to minimize $10,000 or anything like that. I know that can be a lot of money to people, but there's just, we've got to keep in mind that there is the cost involved of going after it.
Absolutely.
And everything is a cost benefit decision as you're going through a divorce or facing those decisions.
Exactly.
Coming up, more on the top five ways narcissists use money to control with Jason Crowley.
And it really is a shift in mindset, right? Because I think one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is you apply your own sense of the world, your own sense of rationality to the way that other people think. And the truth is, a narcissist thinks very differently. So a lot of the times that as you're trying to, you know, punish them or get some sense of justice or any of those types of things, and you feel like you're hurting them, they're actually thriving on that environment.
Is there something preventing you from having the happiness that you want or from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling can start helping you today. It's a safe, private online environment, and you're matched with your own licensed professional therapist. It's all online, so no uncomfortable waiting rooms. They have therapists in all areas, including depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, trauma, anger, family conflicts, even grief. Anything you share is confidential and it's affordable. And in fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/breakingfree. Join 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/breakingfree.
Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can learn more about how to deal with a narcissist in episodes such as Slay Your Negotiation with a Narcissist with host Rebecca Zung.
Basically, they're like wild animals, and you're never going to get the animal to not be wild. It's like they're rabid, screaming like crazy. But the only thing you can do is close in around them, like as if you're building a cage around them so that there's no other way that they can move.
And now we return to today's show.
So the next one is creating debt. So in these situations, people have created debt that nobody knew about. And I will say that as a lawyer, it's really not part of our job to go and do some sort of search to find out if there's debt out there that people aren't disclosing. You know, it's really up to the parties to disclose what their debts are. And, you know, it's part of the mandatory disclosure that's required in every divorce. So, but sometimes there's hidden debts out there or debts that have been created out there that the other person never knew about. I mean, I've had situations where a mortgage was taken out on a piece of property that was purchased and the other person didn't even know about it. And the problem with that can be is most of the time, anything that's created during the marriage, whether it's assets, money, or debt, is usually considered to be either marital property or community property, depending on what state you live in. But that can be a real issue as well. So what do you say about that?
I mean, I think it's kind of a similar idea in terms of cutting off credit cards of an ounce of prevention is really the best place to start. So if you have any suspicions of any of these things, pull a credit report once a year.
Good idea. That's a great idea.
Consider you're able to pull a free credit report once a year. If you, depending on the level of concern, you may want to sign up for one of these credit monitoring services as well that notifies you, things like a LifeLock or similar types of programs. But when you're starting the divorce process, I always recommend clients pull a credit report, dig through, see if there's anything that doesn't look right. And sometimes it's just that the credit bureaus have incorrect information. And so that's an opportunity to correct that information. But sometimes there's something more nefarious than that. And so in order to address the problem, you have to diagnose that there is one. Credit report is a great way to be able to allow you to assess any of those types of things. So you want to do that right at the start of the process. And then maybe 30 days or so, a month after the divorce is closed, pull another credit report and double check to make sure that any of those joint accounts that were supposed to be closed, that they really have been. Get confirming documentation that there's no straggler credit cards or other debt that still remains in your name, or someone didn't follow through on the terms of the marital settlement agreement.
That is great advice. Great advice. It's kind of similar to creating debt is controlling spending. So a lot of the people who responded to our survey said that they had concerns that the narcissist is just spending out of control, and there go all of their assets. So what can they do about that?
Yeah, so I mean, like you said, in general, the rule is when you're married, any sort of spending that happens is, as a general rule, considered to be marital or community expense. And so there are exceptions to that if it's not benefiting the community, if someone's gambling or doing some of those types of things. But now you're talking more of a breach of fiduciary duty issue and trying to get reimbursement. And that's a challenge. So, I mean, two of the things that you can do are either establish a date of separation of some sort or put a postnuptial agreement in place. Part of this, I think, just comes back to the general conversation of, you know, why are they overspending, or are they controlling your spending? And if they're overspending, is this something that's being done intentionally, or are they just wired in a way where maybe they don't think about money the same way as you do? So we kind of have these a fork in the road of, is this just an issue where we're not on the same page in terms of communication, and we actually have to start putting in some sort of a process to make sure that we have a unified financial vision of where we want to, of what we want to achieve and where we want to go. And maybe someone's deviating off course, but we can course correct and get more aligned. Or is this, like I said, is this something that's a little bit more nefarious, where it is more of a control tactic being used by the narcissist? And that's going to lead to a different outcome, because in a lot of ways at that point, you have a decision to make of, do I want to continue giving this relationship a chance, or do I have to rip the Band-Aid out in order to protect myself financially? And sometimes that is the only option if it falls more in that latter camp.
Yeah. And I will add to what you just said, as far as, you know, either a post-nup or, you know, coming up with a date for separation. The other thing is that most jurisdictions, at least here in the States, and maybe across the world too, I'm not sure, but most jurisdictions here actually have something called a standing order or an automatic order, or I don't know what the other terms may be around the country, but it's an order of the court that's automatically issued as soon as the divorce is filed. And it has lots of different things in it, but it also says that you guys have to maintain status quo. So no big sudden movements. You can just, I call it an invisible bubble that kind of comes down around the marital estate, and you can kind of move around within the bubble, but you can't pop the bubble. You can't go outside of it. So you can, you know, spend money for your regular bills and go grocery shopping. It's not like it freezes all your assets, but you can't make any big sudden movements. No major purchases, no major sales, no major spending, no moving of monies into accounts in the Caymans or in Nevis or whatever, no selling of assets, things like that. No changing of beneficiaries is usually one of the things that's included in those orders. So if you really think that this is happening, and this is what I tell my clients when they come in to meet with me for the first time, is if you really are afraid that you're being put into debt, or that your assets are being spent down, then you need to file. You need to file for divorce, because then that court protection will automatically come to you. I would just need to say, as my little disclaimer, that check with your lawyer in your jurisdiction to make sure that that's something that, you know, that sort of protection comes with filing. If it doesn't come with filing in your particular area, then you need to check with your lawyer about maybe asking the court for some sort of limited injunction or some kind of relief in that way that curtails the spending or curtails the putting into debt situation.
Yeah, and we've had situations where we've done that contractually, separate and apart, like prior to filing.
Oh yeah, you could absolutely do that. But if you are dealing with a narcissist, if they know that that's what you want, then they'll just spend more debts. They'll go even further if they know that that's something that bugs you. So,
and that's part of it. Sometimes that's a good way to test it, because if you bring something like that up, depending on the level of defensiveness and their reaction to it, that can be just one more way of kind of the final nail in the coffin of recognizing or realizing what it is that they're trying to do. Because I think that's one of the biggest struggles around this is, a lot of times someone that's with a narcissist, they still want to give them the benefit of the doubt, him or her the benefit of the doubt. And so sometimes what's helpful is to try to give them the chance to kind of reach back and have some sort of mutual exchange. And if they don't take you up on that, that can be something that gives you a little more peace of mind that you are actually seeing things correctly and you should no longer give them the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And don't buy into the love bombing and all those sorts of things, because they're going to start love bombing you. Once they start realizing that their control grip is loosening, then they're going to start coming back with all of the same tactics that they used in the beginning to get control over you in the first place, or that they've used throughout the relationship. So, you know, come on, you know, babe, or, you know, honey, it's okay. I've always got your back. Don't worry about it. I'm taking care of you, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you're a little, the hairs on the back of your neck are going up and that gut feeling inside of you is saying, no, this isn't right, it probably ain't right. So, don't buy into that. Okay. And then the last one is the jacking of attorney's fees, using the court system as a sword, weaponizing the system, or not giving money for attorney's fees to the other side. You know, this is more so for the moneyed spouse, the not giving money. But even either side will have a concern about rising attorney's fees and mounting attorney's fees. So what do you think about that?
So in terms of preparing to be able to pay a retainer and you know, get counsel early on, I think, you know, again, going back to some of that preparation theme that keeps coming up time and time again is find ways to stash some cash prior to pulling the trigger. And so that may mean that when you're going to the grocery store and doing your shopping, that every time you do that, you're pulling an extra $30 or $40 out from the debit and taking $20, $30, $40 out every time. Doing those, if you have some little odd jobs that you're doing, anything that you're doing that you can use to stash that kind of emergency reserve fund will position you so you have some assets to enable you to get counsel. One of the other things, and this is something that I get asked a lot of time that I have a hard time giving advice on, because I think there's two answers. And the right answer totally depends on your situation. If you have access to an account, what a lot of attorneys will advise clients to do is to take half of what's in that account and put it into an account in their own name without telling their spouse. And depending on if your spouse will weaponize money and would take all of those account assets or money and move it into an account in their own name or not give you access, then that may have been a smart decision to take half of the money and put it into your own account in your own name. The problem is that starts you off on the wrong foot. You've escalated conflict right off the bat. And so if you're actually in a situation where you might be able to resolve things amicably, by taking that action, you're probably setting yourself up to not be able to resolve things in an amicable fashion. So that's something where you really just have to make an assessment for yourself of, do I feel like the person that I'm with would remove and cut off my access to these things? And if so, then you may want to err on the side of caution, there. The other thing I think is, in terms of like, once you start the process with mounting attorney's fees, is again, it kind of comes back to the cost benefit decision. So don't try to use the divorce is not an opportunity to get justice. It would be great if it was, but I think when people have that mindset, they end up making really poor decisions in that search and quest for justice. And you really just have to control what you can control and focus on setting yourself up for financial security going forward. And that might mean that you're not winning, but that's okay as long as you're making sure that you're protecting yourself and you're not getting railroaded on a lot of issues. And so finding ways to try to negotiate with that narcissist and learning some of those tactics is a great approach. So I think one of the great things that you can do is really try and learn as part of the negotiation process, what are some of the tactics that you can use? And Rebecca, I mean, that's one of the things I really love about your Slay, your negotiation with the narcissist course, is it gives you a lot of the tricks that a narcissist uses, and it really arms you with some of those tools to enable you to prepare to negotiate with one of these high conflict personalities. And there's really a lot of great stuff in there about, you know, how to respond to email, a lot of really, really powerful things that you can use so that you're not offloading everything to your attorney. Because what I see happen time and time again is when you're divorcing a narcissist is going to use everything that they can to try and trick, control, et cetera. Oftentimes what that leads to is your attorney sending countless emails to deal with every little aspect. And every one of those is going to be at least a point one. And so you're looking at $35, $50, $75 for at a minimum for every email. And we're talking about emails about little, small, trivial things. So by getting a course like yours and learning a lot of the tricks of the trade, they can still maintain some semblance of control over those aspects and use the attorney for the things that you really need help for: legal advice, maneuvering the legal system, all those sorts of things.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. And that's part of why I developed the program. And the other thing that I want to add about that is also the leverage piece, because that's what's really going to help curtail your fees in the long run. Because once you know how to develop leverage, then that will shorten the duration of the case, because narcissists get supply from jerking you around. And jerking you around in the court system is a big source of supply for them. So in order to cut off that supply, you have to have some sort of leverage. And I say this a lot in my videos, but it's worth mentioning here again. And that is that in order to curtail the attorney's fees, the way you're going to do that is figuring out what source of supply is more important to the narcissist to keep than the supply that they get from jerking you around. And then you have to threaten that supply source, whatever that is. And what I tell people all the time is that your attorney doesn't have the information to create the leverage the same way that you do, because the leverage is going to be within those text messages, within those emails, on those social media accounts, in those witnesses. You are the one that has access to all of that. Your lawyer can help you craft legal arguments and can apply the law to the facts, but you're the one that's sitting on the gold mountain there. And you know, you can either turn over it all to your lawyer and let them spend, you know, at $350 an hour, $500 an hour, $750 an hour, like as you were saying, to go through and mount, you know, go through all of that, or you can do it yourself and save tons of money. Plus, most lawyers have no clue about narcissism, just the same way as most financial advisors have no clue about narcissism. I mean, you and I are very unique in our space.
And it really is a shift in mindset, right? Because I think one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is you apply your own sense of the world, your own sense of rationality to the way that other people think. And the truth is, a narcissist thinks very differently. So a lot of the times that as you're trying to, you know, punish them or get some sense of justice or any of those types of things, and you feel like you're hurting them, they're actually thriving on that environment. And so just having that realization, that light bulb moment, that they operate on a totally different mindset than you do is critical to enable you to really to reset your mindset so that you can kind of move forward and focus on what can I do to maintain leverage, like you said.
Oh, that is such a really good point. Really good point. So Jason, where can people learn more about you and how can they contact you and get information about your resources?
Sure. Yeah. So we have a few different divorce-related companies. So one is, if you're in California, we have a divorce financial planning company called Divorce Capital Planning. And so that, in that company, I'm doing a lot of kind of financial mediation, or where I'm working with both parties to come up with an agreement, or where I'm working individually, oftentimes with the non-moneyed spouse, to really help them kind of understand which assets to keep, things of that nature, all the different types of divorce financial planning issues that come up. And then we also have a second company, which is Divorce Mortgage Advisors. And so with that company, we are essentially helping people that are going through the process of divorce to understand how the mortgage fits into their settlement negotiations. Most of the time, people wait until the divorce is done to try and refinance the house in order to remove their spouse. And a lot of times it's either too late, they're not able to qualify, and then you have a whole slew of other issues to deal with. So we really help with kind of bringing that to the forefront so you can figure out how the mortgage fits in and figure out a way to structure it up so that it will work and you will be able to refi after the divorce. And then the resources that we've put together, where we've really invested a ton of time, money, and effort, is survivedivorce.com. And so at that, on that website, we have state resources for really all 50 states that go over divorce laws, divorce process, et cetera. A lot of great information about the emotional issues, co-parenting, finances, really a lot of in-depth, well-researched articles to help people understand everything that they can. I think, you know, one of the things that's changed is, historically, people didn't have access to this information. So you needed to go to a financial advisor to get access to information. You needed to go to an attorney to get access to information. Now, all of that really is available online, or through courses. It really can be laid out step by step so that you know exactly what path to follow. And the beauty of that is that doesn't replace an attorney or a financial advisor. It just enables you to use an attorney for what they're really good at. And you can do a lot of the initial educating, getting educated yourself. And that can take your fees from what would be this much and condense them down significantly, because they don't need to bring you up to speed on the basics. They can tell you how this situation would be applied, or how this judge tends to look at alimony for a case like yours. But they're not telling you what is alimony, is it taxable, all the basics that you can get educated on yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely fantastic resources. I highly recommend that you go check them out. Jason really, really knows his stuff in this space. So go to his websites, check them out, see if there's anything there for you. There's tons of free stuff. So even if you don't have money, go there, check them out, use them. Apply them. It will help you so much with all of these top five ways that narcissists use money to control their targets or their victims. So thank you so much, Jason, for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me, Rebecca. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.